Chapter 22 Reunion.
How long have they been here?
Long. Years? Many times many years.
The drones had dimmed their light, leaving the two alone together in a darkened cave strained to bursting with bodies. They sat facing each other, legs crossed, foreheads close together, near to touching. He kept his eyes closed. The sight of her was still too much. It was enough to hear her voice, to feel her presence. He wished there was wind to carry her scent to him and was ashamed.
What do they do here? He asked.
They survive.
No, I know that. I mean, what else? How do they eat? Where do they sleep?
They don't eat. They don't need to eat. And they're incapable of sleep.
They won't starve?
Not for a very long time. You sometimes enjoy gambling, don't you? Well, if I had to gamble, I'd put money on these drones outliving all the people of Erda if they could only keep hidden long enough.
All the people alive right now, or all that will ever live? He asked.
Yes.
He considered that. Then,
and they just exist down here? They don't do anything? They don't love or fight or build homes together or...
He sensed her movement and opened his eyes. She was looking around them, probably searching out the very subject of their discussion. The line of her neck, though hidden by a shabby melam, was a masterwork of artistry.
I suppose you could say this cave is their home. They're all living together within it, she smiled.
The perfection of her lips constricted his throat, and he closed his eyes again.
Oh, my God, how you glow.
But this is all they do here, he asked. They just stand around?
What else is there to do here?
I don't know. It's just hard to imagine doing nothing but standing around for years on end.
Oh, no, they don't do only that.
Yeah?
Sometimes they flee to evade capture, as I've indicated.
Udo slumped.
You must know what I mean.
Of course I do. But do you know?
Now he felt unbalanced. I was fairly certain, until you just asked that question.
What I mean to say, or ask, is, what kind of activity do you imagine people like this would engage in? They haven't the same needs as you. They don't sleep, so they require no shelter to protect their unconscious bodies. They don't eat, so they needn't grow or harvest crops, not that any vegetation would survive down here. And forget livestock, not without a melam. Honestly, can you imagine? A whole herd of goats trotting around in this cave, each one in its own little melam.
The laughter was music in a soundless world. For the wink of an eye, the armor of the drones brightened in sympathy, then dimmed again. She continued,
And because they don't eat, they do not excrete. They lack the means of replication, so sexual intercourse is likewise of no interest. They don't even have an anatomy supportive of such activity, Udo.
What a terrible shame.
Udo shifted in discomfort.
And so we have ruled out the motivations for your daily activities? What is left? A mummer's show? They have no conception of art. What need have these of art? They are unrestrained in self-expression. If this one over here wishes to convey its experiences to that one on the other side of the cave, it can transmit those experiences directly to its intended target, unfiltered and uncorrupted. With access to such fidelity, what purpose would there be in composing a song, of writing a play or a story, or painting a picture? The imagery may be directly inserted. What stories would they tell to each other?
Udo perked up. Her words had recalled the giants of Talam to his thoughts.
They would tell stories to each other that explain things they don't understand.
What?
How much do they know about this place?
The cave?
No, that and everything around it. The diaspora. What do they know of its secrets?
A fair deal, I should think, she smiled. More than Udo, definitely.
I don't doubt you, but there must be a limit to their knowledge. You there, Triangle. Would you come closer? Please.
The one he called Triangle picked his way across the floor, long hooked blades pinching through the rocks, probing like a long-toed bird.
Udo has called.
Yes, would you sit with us a moment? I'd like to ask you something.
Triangle seemed to consider this. Udo wondered if he'd ever tried to sit down before. Maybe he hadn't. If they never slept, they had no need for rest. And if there was no need for rest, they would exhibit none of the behaviors that accompanied rest. No lying down, no sitting, no leaning against things. None of the hundreds of little actions that betrayed fatigue. For a moment, he considered telling the creature to disregard his request, but then Triangle was lowering. Slowly, carefully, he pulled himself toward the ground. The jagged angles of his knees pulled up along either side of his mask as he was still forced to grasp with his feet. He was not wearing a miraculous skin that could simply adhere to surfaces upon a thought. When he was finished, he stared at them both from an awkward kind of half-squat. He looked as though someone had stashed him away in a cupboard.
Thank you, Udo said. Now, if you don't mind, would you tell us, what is it that surrounds us?
The cavern of hell.
And what is beyond that?
Mostly emptiness now. Then the core.
I'm sorry, the what?
He means inward, she said.
When Udo looked at her, she pointed toward the floor with one slender finger.
Down. That way.
Then she glanced toward the ceiling.
You need to give him a sense of direction.
Oh, Udo grunted. All right, Triangle. What I meant was...
He paused, glanced down at the floor, then back at the goddess. Then he shook his head, sighed, and continued again.
Well, what I meant to ask was, up that way, what is beyond hell? Or rather, what is above hell? Maybe that makes more sense.
The worlds of the diaspora, said the drone.
All right, all right. And what's beyond those worlds?
The outer shell of the planetoid.
Planet.
He means this, she said, holding up a few chips of loose rubble. The outer shell of this rock.
Oh, thank you.
Of course, she giggled.
Now tell me, Triangle, what's beyond that shell?
The drone was silent. Then, just as Udo was preparing to further clarify his question, he said,
I don't know.
All right, Udo said. In that case, what do you imagine might be out there?
Imagine?
Sure, as in, if I asked you to guess what's out there, what would you say?
Guess?
Yeah, guess.
The drone gave the question some thought.
I don't know. I imagine it would be dark.
Oh? Why is that? Asked Udo.
He looked away from the drone. He was staring at her now, searching out her reaction. Her eyes narrowed mischievously as if they were concocting a secret joke together.
There is no evidence suggesting any light sources exist beyond the shell. Therefore, I imagine that it must be very dark.
There you have it, she smiled.
Udo was silent. He was thinking. A few moments later, Triangle stirred.
Perhaps another diaspora? What?
The word collapsed from her mouth like a flat note played upon some untuned instrument.
Another diaspora, Triangle suggested. One exists already. There may be more.
Now Udo smiled.
If there were another diaspora, it would mean there are other worlds within it.
Yes, it follows, Triangle agreed.
And other peoples within those other worlds.
Correct.
What do you imagine those people might be like?
Triangle paused again.
Perhaps they are like those people who live within our diaspora.
But which people? Udo pressed. He gestured toward the ceiling of the cavern and said,
There are two types of people up there right now, as different from each other in shape as any two groups can be. One of those groups looks a lot like me, or they're my size anyway. Some of them are more handsome, obviously. Also, some are young, some are old, some are women, of course, and the variance in their appearance, one woman to another, is as numerous as the variations of our faces. But if you were to stand all of us together, that is, a large group of the people of Erda, you would know we all came from the same place. Even the Walhazians, who look as different from the Theodiscans as it is possible to appear, look as though they come from Erda. Now, in the meantime, you have Talam, Erda's twin. Her people are all giants. So, like me, right, but much larger. And they tend to be proportioned differently. The ratios all seem the same, the length of their arms in relation to their bodies and legs, the breadth of their shoulders, the width of their hips. It all seems about right. But their hands and feet are enormous, even for them. Their eyes, though lovingly crafted by the gods to rival the radiance of precious stones, are nonetheless spaced further apart than I am used to, which perhaps would look oafish on a man or woman of my size, but which seems noble upon their mighty faces.
We have seen their kind, Triangle said. Others as well.
Look upon this goddess, Udo said. Immediately after, he inclined his head to her and said, Please excuse me.
Not at all, she laughed. You're doing quite well.
See her skin? Udo continued. It is beautiful and wondrous. But you must admit, it is different from mine. It sets us apart, see? Hers carries that deep and incredible luster, as if she'd been composed by a master of the very richest elements in all creation, whereas I appear to be a half-finished mistake.
Not to me, she chided.
Udo continued, The point is that you can see all the ways in which we are similar, but you can also clearly see the ways in which we are different.
I do, Triangle agreed.
All right. So that's three different kinds right there. Giants, people who are pale, and people who are dark. Three unique types all here in this place, and who knows what else is up there.
Triangle seemed to perk up at this, but then settled back down at a look from Irpisha. I think she must not have wanted the drone to interrupt Udo's thought process.
So, given all that, Udo said, what kind of people do you think might be found in this other diaspora? How different to us do you think they'd be? In fact, how different to each other do you think they'd be?
Might they not all be the same? Triangle asked.
The same?
Yes.
You mean all the peoples of the imagined diaspora would resemble in all aspects the peoples of this diaspora? Or do you mean to suggest that the people themselves are replicated? An Udo both here and there, for example?
Could not both possibilities be equally true?
Wait, you're losing me, Udo said. Do you mean three diasporas now? The one we're currently in, another that has exact copies of us, and then yet another still that only has people similar to ours?
Yes. If there is one diaspora, there may be two. And if there are two, might there be three, four?
Udo thought it over. I suppose there might just be. I have no way to disprove the idea.
No way to prove it either, she reminded him.
Triangle mused.
These ideas. Intriguing.
He crouched quietly, cruel blades gently clinging. For a moment, it appeared to Udo as if he'd gone to sleep, despite Irpisha's claims to the contrary. Then the drone stood suddenly and said,
May I leave?
Where would you go?
Irpisha asked.
I wish to discuss this with the others. I want to learn what they think about this.
She looked at Udo with bright eyes and awaited his answer. He nodded at Triangle and said,
Of course.
They watched him together.
When he'd rejoined the other drones, they all crowded together as if sharing some deep secret and were silent.
Interesting, she said.
What?
What gave you the idea to ask him those questions?
I was thinking of the giants again. When I lived in their world, remember? Or, I'm sorry. Perhaps you weren't watching then.
I was. Probably not as closely as you would have hoped, but I was. I knew you were alive and well and as safe as you could be.
Well, anyway, I was thinking about how it was for them and how it was different for us. We had these priests, all right, and the way it was set up. Oh, well, hell, I guess you know all that, don't you? But that was the way. There were all these priests that told you how things were. They supposedly had these tablets or books or whatever they were supposed to be that told the story of our world. The gods and how everything was made and why it was made and the ways to behave that were lawful and those ways to behave which were wrong. The priests were all sitting on this knowledge, handing it out however they saw fit. And no one could check up on them. Not even kings had access to this information. It was like our history was this goad that they used to prod us in whatever direction they desired.
You might be interested to know that a number of these virtuous souls have likely found a home in our very own second circle.
And then, in the other hand, you have the giants. Completely different, these people. I don't think they had any of these sacred texts to go from. Or maybe you just hadn't given the tablets to them yet?
She didn't offer to clarify for him, so he pressed on.
Either way, no one in their clan controlled their story the way the priests did ours. They all owned a piece of it together. They told it back to each other every night. Sometimes even the children joined in. And the adults never told the children to be still like they did in Erda either. The children shaped the story just as much as their parents. As much as the elders. They crafted it together. They built upon it as a group.
A family, she said.
Yes. Yes, I suppose so. And it didn't matter. It didn't matter at all whether the story was correct or not. It was true. Is that possible? Can a story be incorrect, yet still true?
Oh, yes.
I think that's how it was for them. They had no way to tell if their stories were correct or not. How could they? They were making it up as they went along. But between our worlds, Erda and Talam, I believe the giants told the stories that were most true.
It sounds as though you believe the giants' way is better.
It is.
And now you have taught that way to the drones.
He didn't answer. He was unsure what to say.
Why did you leave them, Udo?
What is the right name to call you? He asked. Ing? Irpisha?
Either name pleases me.
But which name pleases you more?
The one that feels best in your mouth.
Udo looked away.
You haven't answered me. Why? Why did you leave the giants? You were happy there.
I don't want to talk about it.
All right, Udo. For now, all right. But you must deal with it soon.
I suspected as much. I've been prodded every step of the way, it seems.
Yes, but do not take it personally, if possible. There is much for you to learn.
What must I learn?
As much as you're able.
Why?
The same reason anyone learns anything. They hope to improve.
I'm sorry. It is very hard.
Yes.
The drones still held Congress. Udo couldn't tell if they'd moved or not. They often resembled metal trees when they weren't speaking, or mirrors that had been arranged to mock the human form. He watched them. He wondered if he could hear them if he desired. He sometimes felt a tickle just at the back of his skull, at the midway point between the ears, just where head joined neck. It needled at him when he tried to imagine what they were thinking. It was as if a miniature carpenter stood upon his neck, turning an auger, pulling up little chunks of flesh with each screw. "They're older?" he asked. Yerpisha straightened. She'd leaned back into the wall as if it were a cradle when Udo had finished speaking, perhaps sensing he needed the time to work through his own thoughts, perhaps only waiting for events to play out. Even now, after all that has happened, I still don't know. She's with me, right now, standing at my side, both physically and within the mind, helping me to search. Whoever dreamed the emptiness of chaos could be so filled. But we stand together, and communication is instantaneous. I have only to give breath to a thought, and she receives it, shelters it, grows it into something more. It is as effortless as the effort I expend in committing these words to memory. And even so, I do not know what was in her heart when they sat together in the cavern.
Older than humanity, you mean? She asked.
Yes.
Oh, no. Humans are much older.
Really?
You're surprised?
Well, a little bit, yeah.
Why?
Udo shifted in place and cleared his throat. He seemed reluctant to continue.
Udo?
Yes.
I want you to stop regarding me as though I'm a god.
He gave her a look.
I'm serious, she insisted. Right now, you and I have far more in common with each other than you do with any other person in Erda. We are both souls encapsulated within temporary structures, delivered for the purposes of enacting our will upon a physical world.
Yes, I agree, Udo allowed. Then again, and please forgive me, but there are many philosophers of Erda who would claim that all Theodiscans have this condition in common.
True, but there is a fundamental difference between us and those philosophers.
Yes?
Your Theodiscan philosophers are only guessing.
She smiled at him. Despite his discomfort, he could not help but return it.
More importantly, she continued, it is critical for you to understand that the gods really do not play fair, Udo. Everything we do is about control. We can't help it. It's who we are. It's what we were created to be. Even now, every second, my thought process suggests 100 different actions I could pursue to make you do, say, think, and feel whatever I desire. It is the ultimate expression of my purpose as a living being, and believe me, it is everything I can do to restrain myself.
I don't understand. Shouldn't a god have supreme control?
Even gods are subject to their own nature. Here, look at me. Look at this body.
She gestured to her own person as if she were a cast-off putrid thing. Udo recoiled. Her expression made him feel like screaming.
I could wear any skin I desire. I could be fair-skinned, blonde-haired, or red. Tall, short, skinny, fat, male, female, young or old. I could have easily appeared before you in Godon's moldy husk. And you never would have known the difference, eh? This body, with a skin that may as well have been alien to you, was chosen on a whim because I admire its symmetry, and I did not expect to encounter any of your kind on the day I found you. And then, when I looked inside of you and saw your history, I understood how fortunate my choice had been. But I don't need to wear this body now. Your loyalty is secured. Even enshrouded as a chancred crone, I could say the things necessary for you to follow, and you would.
In that case, I thank you for choosing a form that is lovely, and also for showing me something new. Can people grow like this naturally? It's not just some godly trick.
You mean the darkened skin?
Yes.
Very natural. There are entire worlds populated with such people.
Why have I seen none in Erda? Why are there no dark giants in Talam?
That question is more difficult to answer.
I'm sorry.
No, she shook her head. It is a good one. And the answer, which at first seems deceptively simple and yet is not, is chance. There are indeed worlds that contain only dark-skinned people. There are also others that join dark and light-skinned people together. Each world has its own unique benefits and challenges it must face, depending on such starting conditions. But to your point, the reason you haven't seen any in Erda is only due to chance. Your world simply happened to be a different kind of experiment.
Experiment? What kind of experiment?
The same experiment any god would engage in. To create a species of people strong enough to support themselves.
Udo leaned back and screwed his face up at her. The statement had confused him so much that he forgot for a moment to be reverent.
That doesn't make any sense.
Oh?
She laughed.
Sorry, but yes. If that's the goal, then your job is done. We do support ourselves.
Oh, you do you?
Yes. We have professions, skills that we trade. Farmers grow food from the skin of Erda to feed their families and to sell the excess at market. Smiths work metals to fashion tools and weaponry.
Ah, yes. That's a familiar subject, the smiths. And where does the metal they work come from?
It is pulled from the skin of Erda.
Just so. And doesn't it seem interesting to you, as a one-time digger, that ore happened to reappear in a patch of soil you churned only a few days prior?
Like others, I assumed the ore was replaced through natural processes, grown through the serpent's skin, like fingernails.
Yapisha cast her eyes toward the ceiling and sighed. She said,
Tell me, did you see any wings or legs attached to that spinning tube when you took Charon's raft down to hell?
No.
So it is safe to say that Erda is probably not a serpent.
Udo began to fidget. Her questions were making him uncomfortable. She noticed this behavior in him and took his hand.
Hey, she said, it isn't a blasphemy to discuss these things. I'm leading this conversation, Udo. I promise you are without sin.
He nodded and swallowed.
Yes, Erda probably isn't a serpent.
She gave his hand a slight pat and released it.
See, you did not burst into flames.
We haven't finished this conversation.
She laughed.
Very good. But you are correct, Erda is not a worm, and Godon does not ride it. It, Udo, not a him or her.
Just another vessel, another tank like those upon the fields of hell, carrying hundreds of thousands of souls.
And no, you are not sustaining yourselves. We are sustaining you, and you have all adapted to survive the constraints that we have set. With the occasional benefit of divine theophany, of course.
Yeah, he muttered.
You have a question?
More like a thought. You said the gods want to create a stronger species of human.
She shrugged.
More or less.
Does darkness of skin play a role in strength?
No. Well, not in so many words.
How many words does it take to explain?
She smiled and then shook her head.
All right. Well, it's complicated. It's one of those things the gods struggle with. A simple problem with an infinitude of variation. It works like this. Humans grow stronger through adaptation, do you agree? If I provided you a heavy stone and asked you to move it, and you couldn't move it, it means you are too physically weak to do as I ask. But if I gave you a lighter stone, something you could move, and you moved it many times, you could return later to the heavier stone and perhaps move it as well. You have therefore grown stronger, correct?
Obviously.
Good. That's a very small, isolated example of human adaptation. But humans adapt through a multitude of means. Physical strength is a primary factor, to be sure, but what about mental gifts? What of your advancements? The gods gifted you with the secrets of forging metals, but who among you learned to fashion that metal into tools? Your people reinvented the sword, Udo. We didn't give it to you. Your kind rediscovered a secret that your ancestors had already discovered thousands of years ago, before the gods ever existed.
Before?
Just hang on, I'm coming to a point. Your people dreamt the sword. We did not give it to you. Wouldn't you call that an impressive adaptation? Wouldn't you describe the invention of that tool as something that changed the course of your history?
I would, he nodded. I was just thinking of the water wheels. Baldovinus's water wheels?
Irpisha nodded. Exactly. That's exactly correct. And there are still more ways to adapt. There are adaptations in which eyesight is improved, in which less food is required, in which disease is resisted. Every aspect of your being is a governable variable that may be improved. You're with me so far? He nodded. Good. Now the next piece of this equation. The degree to which your kind can adapt is governed by your own internal structures. This now becomes difficult to explain because your state of knowledge is rather behind the principles employed. But my best attempt follows. When a child is born, the divine essence of the mother and father join together within the baby. These essences mix together and imbue the child with certain abilities. The father's strength, the mother's intellect, the father's eyesight, and so on. Now, this is adaptation on a fundamental scale. It isn't a man growing stronger by moving stones. It is a species slowly changing over time. It is a never-ending list of traits, abilities, and behaviors that, on a small scale, produce random variations in the average man or woman. Different eye color, hair loss, longevity, length of fingers or toes, chemical dependence, five fingers or six. All of these things come as a result of the random shuffling together of the parent's divine essence.
I'm starting to be confused.
Which part is unclear?
Udo scratched at his jaw.
Well, you said five fingers or six. I've seen people with six fingers. The sixth finger is always useless. It's just a bit of skin dangling from the side of the hand. Sometimes people would take care of the extra finger by getting their load on and visiting a barber. So is that like you said? The random joining of the parents produced a useless sixth finger? What good is that?
You've never seen a sixth finger that worked, eh?
To my knowledge, such a thing does not exist.
It does.
It does?
She nodded. It's just rare. But that's the point. Over enough time and after enough people, and assuming conditions were such that six-fingered people enjoyed an advantage over five-fingered people, eventually all people would have six fingers. They would just be more likely to survive, and their traits, their unique aspects, would be handed down to their own children.
Like breeding livestock, he whispered. He was rightly disturbed.
Mm-hmm. She agreed. And the good news is that if the process is controlled, guided along, it doesn't take nearly as long or require as many people to carry out than it would if things were just allowed to progress randomly. This is the gods' great experiment, Udo, to craft over time a stronger, more survivable human. It is also our great burden. As I've said, different aspects in the parents translate to new traits and abilities in the children. And we have learned through ample experimentation that the more dissimilar the parents, the stronger the offspring will likely be. There is more opportunity for variety in their makeup, therefore more opportunity for growth, more paths to unique, unexplored abilities. Are you all right?
He'd been looking at a rock on the ground.
Yes, fine. I thought I felt that rock shift.
You did. It's not important yet. Do you understand the things I've told you so far?
I do, Udo nodded. We used to see the same thing in back-alley mutts. You had these special breeds of hound that the nobles would cultivate, right? They used them for hunting or fighting, or in the case of noble women, as replacements for their children, who had fully grown and gone away. Sometimes the pure animals would sire offspring on the alley dogs when they strayed. And this offspring, the mutts and the runts, they always ended up being the pack leaders if they could only survive to adulthood. They weren't even necessarily the biggest or strongest of the dogs. They were just the meanest sons of bitches on the cobbles. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yerpisha waved the apology away.
Anyway, yeah, it makes a certain kind of sense. A certain kind of terrible, uneasy sense.
He was thinking of hogs being slaughtered at the end of harvest.
But then I have to ask, given what you've told me, doesn't that mean that a world with two different types of people in it produces something better than a world like Erda?
Fundamentally, yes. It makes for greater variety, which is always good. But this is also where the challenge lies. When we place many people into the same environment, there must be resources for them to survive together. But not so many resources that they don't have to struggle. At least a little. It's a very delicate equation to balance. The slightest scarcity of the wrong thing and the entire population could be thrown into war and subjugation. And we know, before you ask, that it has nothing to do with the darkness of your skins.
I was not about to ask. The thought had not occurred to me.
Hadn't it?
No.
She nodded to herself.
Well, that's to your credit. But even so, we've found that your species has an incredible ability to spot differences between yourselves, no matter how obvious or subtle. The varied hue of your bodies is actually the easiest trait to diffuse. We just start a population of mixed types from day one and provide a few stories explaining the difference. We give the people a foundation to build from together, and when they all start as insiders of the same group, they generally remain that way. Under normal circumstances, the differences are only curiosities, little bits of data that they assimilate and then move on. But now we come to the subject of balance. This is the most difficult aspect of curation. When mishandled, it could lead to an entire population failure. Your kind desires struggle, Udo, but only so much. If the correct amount is provided, you'll pull together, combat the challenges as a society, and thrive. You accomplish great, incredible things, grow together, and are enriched. But how much struggle is warranted? It's not always the same amount, though you might think otherwise. Different conditions call for different leverages. When things are too easy, your survival instincts tend to grow hyperactive, and I really believe this is due to the early development of your species. It's as though your people have an ingrained aversion to ease, to good times that seem too good. With enough idle time added into your days, you all seem to go a little crazy. It's a hereditary illness, one which we've been fighting since the beginning. With enough struggle, your differences are, to you, meaningless data points. But under too little struggle, you amplify your differences. They become wedges driven between you. I've seen it over and over again, and, reviewing your history, I know this problem is not localized to the diaspora. It's something inherent within yourselves. Entire human empires have fallen to this sickness of yours, this decay of largesse.
I don't know what that word means.
On the other hand, let times become too difficult, and oh my goodness, those differences you all spend so much effort cataloging become very ugly excuses. You catalog yourselves, divide yourselves up into different groups, and then, most illogically of all, you begin to worship those aspects that make you different from each other. Take the Walhazians as an example. We gave your two peoples nearly identical religious foundations, Udo. All we did was change a few names around to see what would happen, and look what happened. Look at what you do to each other.
Now hang on a minute, Udo said. That isn't right. We didn't get there on our own. The gods have been pushing us along every step of the way.
Have we been pushing you? Or have we simply taken advantage of a naturally occurring variable to keep populations from growing out of control?
Udo did not answer. He was still thinking of the harvest hogs. She shook her head.
It doesn't matter what it is. Whatever little thing that makes groups of people different, you'll latch onto that thing and use it to destroy yourselves. And, if you don't mind me saying, it's the thing most frustrating about your kind. It's frustrating because it's a behavior that was, at one point in your distant history, necessary to your survival. Worse, it may be necessary again one day, and we have no idea what to do about that.
How could destroying each other be a necessary behavior? He asked.
He was growing sick of the discussion. It seemed to be moving in circles without reason, but always returned to the same starting point. Your people are doomed, Udo. It made him sullen.
It comes from a very long time ago, before the diaspora or the gods, when man struggled naked across the landscape of his first home, and resources were very limited. I'll ask you to consider. Imagine you and your family.
I haven't any family.
Yet you have lived and fought among others and have defended them with your own life.
Udo didn't answer at first. Finally, he conceded and said,
All right.
Thank you. So, you and your family, or whatever you'd like to call them, are stranded on a small island at the center of the Mittlera, with only a few scraps of food and a supply of fresh water that would support maybe half of your number. What would you all do?
Udo thought of the men with whom he'd marched across Walhaz, or the giants he'd hunted with in Talam.
We would die.
Why?
Because none of us would be willing to deny the others their portion. So we would suffer for a while, slowly starve, and then die.
All right. Now consider this. What if there were two different groups on that island? They're strange to each other in some way, something simple. One group enjoys full heads of hair, while the other is entirely bald. And suppose they've never met before, or at least have not traded with each other in the past. Same circumstances, only enough food and water to support a small portion of either group. What happens then?
One group would likely kill the other to minimize the hardship for their fellows.
Irpicia spread her hands.
And there you have the conundrum we have been struggling with for generations. Primitive circumstances favor primitive, aggressive behavior. Who do you imagine would win the battle for that muddy little waterhole?
The strongest group.
Yes. And now think on Erda as it is. Think of the way your people live, the tools they use. Think on the success of Baldovinus's water wheels. There was a device that made the Theodiscan army quite strong. Yet its origination had nothing to do with physical strength, eh? The water wheel was a contrivance born in the mind of a frail individual, do you see? At some point, Udo, your societies grow and develop to a state at which the primitive, aggressive behavior of your ancestors, those traits carried forward in your breeding, become a hindrance to your survival. And it is a trait we are afraid to eliminate because there may come a time when you need it again. There may be a day when you find yourselves returned to a primitive world, a truly primitive world. I'm speaking of banging rocks together now. And without that aggression, you would simply die off, just as we know you are equally doomed in a world without struggle.
I see what you mean, Udo nodded. When things are hard, we need to be harder. Sometimes that hardness ends up harming our own kind, but from the lay of a simple numbers game, man survives. But that same behavior is what causes him to kill himself off when things change for the better.
That is a very simplified way to describe things, but yes, she said. Essentially, that is the problem. You are an incredibly frustrating people, do you know that? Individually, you are capable of tremendous grace, empathy, sympathy, insight, intuition, community. Again, individually. But as you grow, and especially as your numbers grow, your collective intelligence regresses to infancy, and at that point, it seems the only way to keep you from killing yourselves by any means possible is to stand you up against a challenge that threatens you all equally.
Such were the circumstances at the heart of the diaspora's founding.
Tell me, he insisted.
I can't. She was looking at the same rock Udo had stared at only a few moments before. They'd noticed it together. It was shifting periodically throughout their conversation. Now they saw how some of the larger rocks surrounding it were likewise beginning to unsettle.
We have to leave, Yapisha said. All of us. Right now.